Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
Hi, Laura. This is Kate Hensler. I'm a developmental interventionist with the First Steps program, which is Kentucky's early intervention program for 0 to 3-year-old kids with developmental delays. How are you doing?
I'm good. You threw me a little bit. One, with the music being so weird, and then two, with your new intro.
Well, I'm just winging it.
As usual.
As usual.
Yeah, well, today is Thursday, March 13th, and if you're listening now, you're listening live. And we are so glad you joined us today. Today would also be a great day if any mom or a therapist has a question to give us a call. Our call-in number is 1-718-766-4332, and we would be more than happy to talk with you about your questions about your own child with language and cognitive and developmental delays, or if you're a therapist, maybe some problem solving to help you with some children on your caseload. We'd love to hear from you. And in the meantime, we have three great emails or comments from moms. They've left them on my website at teachmetotalk.com, and so we're going to use those as the basis for the show today. So I'll just get started with reading that, Kate, unless you have something you want to talk about first.
No, just to say, and I know, Laura, you put this in your response to these mommies, but if they're actually listening, it would be great if they would call, so, because I know on some of them you had a couple of follow-up questions. I don't know if you heard a response or not, but it would be fun to be able to ask them specifically. But in any case, that's the only thing.
Yeah, and I do have some things that when we're talking about this, I'm going to say, if she meant this, this is what I would do, or if she meant that, this is what I would do. So that's good advice. If they're listening and are brave and want to call us, that would be great. And I did check email and the website, and there are no responses from them there. So we're just going to have to wing it as usual.
We'll probably
all right, the first,
then respond. A lot of moms are afraid to call, and really, it's just like being on the phone. That's really all it is. So we don't let it bother us. It's not a big deal if you just talk.
That's right, and no one can mess up as much as I do, so don't worry
about
it.
You can say
it,
we. I won't be offended.
Call. We are very laid back. If you've listened to the show more than 2 seconds, you know that, but feel free to call. Okay, let's start with the first letter. It's from a mom named Patty, and she says, "Hello, Laura. I'm the mom to a terrific 19-month-old boy. He's currently in intervention for his fine and gross motor skills. His speech isn't great, but he has between 15 to 20 words now, and he only had 3 words at 15 months. So that's good. He's making progress. He's showing improvement, but he's still not where we'd like to see him. He did not qualify for speech intervention when he was tested at 17 months, but I have him on a waiting list for private speech therapy. My bigger concern with him is the lack of pointing. He does show joint attention, but not enough in my opinion." And if a mom is listening and you're not sure what joint attention means, it means that a baby, you and your baby are playing with a toy, and the baby looks at you and then looks at the toy and then looks back at you and then looks at the toy, and you are both paying attention to the same thing. And in contrast, that would be like a child who is really engrossed in doing his own thing when he's playing and doesn't look up at you at all. Or sometimes I'll see children and think that they lack joint attention when I'm holding something they really want and they never look at my face to indicate to me in any way, shape, or form that they're paying attention to anything except what I'm holding in my hand. So joint attention is that back and forth eye contact that you have. And again, he looks at the toy, he looks at you, he looks at the toy, he looks at you. So she says he does have good joint attention. She says, but not enough. I thought that his receptive language was pretty good, as he seems to understand most commands, at least, and will follow through, such as throwing this in the garbage, it's time for bath, going to the stairs, etc. Let me just mention that all those little things are important, understanding daily routines and understanding simple questions related to that, but those are really skills that you would want to see in a baby at the 12-month level, at the 12 to 15-month level. And he's 19 months, so there, if he's not really identifying lots of objects and things beyond that following directions related to simple routines, he could have a receptive language delay as well. Okay, she says, then she goes on to say, "We've been told by the neurologist and the pediatrician that they do not think he has autism. The early intervention team said they're concerned about the lack of pointing, but they are not comfortable saying autism spectrum disorders either. It's not so much that I want him labeled as much as it is, that I want to make sure we're doing all the best things we can to get him where he should be. The rest of the red flag list for autism just doesn't fit him. Could the lack of pointing just be a language delay? Is this something we can teach him? And she says, I ordered your Teach Me to Talk DVD last night, but I'm not wondering.
I wonder if she meant I am wondering.
I think that's what she meant, too, because I've paused. But I'm wondering about the Teach Me to Listen and Obey DVD. He makes good eye contact. He'll bring me things when asked to do so. He's pretty good with pretend play. He wants to share his food with me while I'm eating. He seems to be making progress in learning words and then using them on his own. For example, he'll go to the oven while I'm cooking and say hot, or will pull out the pots and pans and say cook before he starts playing with them, stirring, etc. He's very affectionate. He usually responds to his name. However, if I ask him where's daddy, he might go find him, he might go look at him, but he will not point to him. We've seen him point to one or two things in a book and once at the window and said car, but I know in my gut that something is off. Help, thanks. Okay, you want to start with this one, Kate, or do you want me to read what I wrote to her first?
Well, why don't you read what you wrote, and then we'll have a look at it.
Yeah, so I say, Patty, thank you for a question. We're going to talk about it on the podcast today, blah, 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 blah. I do have a question for you. Is he using other gestures, such as waving bye-bye, pushing you away, or holding his hands up to you in protest, clapping, holding his hands up to be picked up, or holding his hands out as if asking where when he's looking for something? Is he covering his eyes for peekaboo, doing hand motions with songs, or signing anything? If he's not doing any of those, it could be that his fine motor, gross motor delays are causing him not to gesture either. What do his OT and PT say about this? Have you asked them for their opinions? If he is doing the kinds of things listed above, it could be that pointing isn't meaningful to him yet. You may have to teach him how to do it, and then we're going to talk about that on here. But my first idea when I was reading this is if he has those fine and gross motor delays, he just may not be super at using his hands for things and using his arms for things. So did you think that when you read this, Kate, or were you going the other way with cognition?
Well,
you're usually the cognitive.
Yeah.
I usually say, oh, it's a motor planning thing. It's a fine motor thing. And you say, no, Laura, it's the big motor. It's the brain part. It's the cognitive part. And we don't know about this little boy. We're just talking. We're just talking like we would about kids on our caseload or, you know, kids that we knew. Or so, again, we're not being disrespectful. I'm just blabbing on. As usual, go ahead, Kate. I've talked
myself
into the hole.
In general, that's how we look at. Yeah. Well, I love your question about does he do these other almost more primitive, more basic, more fundamental gestures, more natural.
Right.
Another one we see a lot in babies or young toddlers is the, we call them gimme fingers, where they're reaching,
right,
and opening and closing their hands. And those things, a lot of kids who don't, and this little guy has a decent number of words. And that's making progress, so that's great. But, you know, if he didn't have any of those, I would say one thing about his words that kind of makes me wonder is he's kind of like doing that narrating his play stuff, not necessarily requesting things with words, at least not the examples,
right,
that she gave. And he may, in fact, do that, but those were just the words she was giving as examples. So I would say, you know, if he had these other, or even a couple of those, like waving bye-bye. Well, you know, by 19 months, we certainly expect children to be able to wave consistently and to understand that and, you know, to have that be really fairly automatic by that age. If waving wasn't there, the reaching is typically very early on. Babies get that. You know, they're stuck in their walker and they're reaching up as if to say, get me out of here. You know,
right,
come get me, mommy. If those weren't there, I'd have more concern, you know, because she says, well, he gets OT. Obviously, there are some, I don't know if that's primarily for sensory issues or primarily for fine motor or perhaps as is often the case, it's for a combination of reasons, usually both of those,
right,
sensory and fine motor, because those oftentimes do go hand in hand. You know, it may be that he really does, he's not able to isolate his index finger yet. He really hasn't picked that up. It sounds like he's done it a couple of times, but he isn't using it to get her attention, you know.
Right.
So I don't know. I'd like to see this little guy. Is my best answer. I'm not sure. I've certainly had kids that I did not think were on the spectrum in any way, shape, or form at 19 months who did not point, even
yeah,
though
me
that
too.
Is a classic red flag for, you know, could this child be on the spectrum? You're probably going to find that on most checklists. That doesn't mean that a child at 19 months who doesn't point is definitely on the spectrum. You know, the fact
right.
that he's making this kind of progress, the fact that he is using words, the fact that he does follow simple commands, those are all very good signs. The joint attention to me is highly significant.
Right.
You know, that's something that we do see lacking in, you know, I firmly believe that kids that we work with and who make nice progress, that comes in pretty well, but it's not something they typically have initially when services begin, or even 19 months is kind of young. I think normally when I see kids that I suspect or know are on the spectrum, it's more about 24, 25, 26 months where I see, oh, that joint attention really is coming in.
Right, and it's after you've seen them for a while. And
right, and we've worked on
going.
It.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of those are good signs, and, you know, sight unseen, I certainly applaud this mother for being so proactive and doing everything she can do, and even though the worrying is very hard on mom and dad, it's going to work to this child's advantage whether he's on the spectrum or not. And, you know, there are some issues or he wouldn't be getting any services. So she's absolutely
right.
doing the right thing.
Right.
You
know, and what would you do if you had this kid on your caseload? And I certainly have had moms that say at the beginning, oh, he's not pointing to anything. Aren't you worried about that? And I'll say, let's talk about these other things first, and then we'll talk about if he's ready to point yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so what kinds of things do you work on when you have a kid that's not a pointer? I always start back with these early gestures that I'm
right.
That I listed there. And if you are just joining us from Blog Talk Radio and don't know about my website, it's teachmetotalk.com, and you can find my response to this mom over in the right-hand column under the comments section. You have to go down about halfway down the page or scroll on down. And this mom's name is Patty, and I listed some of those early gestures there. And when we say work on these, we just mean you do them and do them and do them, and you take your child's hands and help him or her do them, and you just wear them out and make it part of your daily routine. You say bye-bye if your child isn't a great waiver. You say bye-bye to every toy that you're putting away. You wave all day long at people that are passing your home. Or when you're in the grocery store, you wave bye-bye to every person you pass in the cart. You just wave, wave, wave all day. And when that's what we mean by working on it. We mean you do it and do it and do it until it becomes kind of second nature. And I was just working with a little boy this morning he can move one of his arms. He has a cerebral palsy diagnosis and also had a stroke when he was 3 days old. So he has some real issues with mobility and moving his arms and legs. But he can really move that left arm now a lot when he's fussing and kind of protesting, or even when he's happy and dancing. So I think, if you can move it then, you can move it to wave. So you really want to do like I'm doing with my little guy and grab his hand and help him wave and help him do that and really show him how to do it a lot. And all these things that we're going to talk about and these ideas, you just want to make sure that you present the opportunities during your day over and over and over. And it needs to make sense. It needs to be in context so that he knows when to use that little gesture. So as we say working on, that's what we mean by that little term.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, I also wonder about this guy. Does he seem to understand and follow her point? You know what I mean? Because
right.
by this age, typically kids are not only using that point, but if you're saying, you know, where's the ball? Where's the ball? And he hasn't been able to locate the ball, and mommy says, it's right there, and gives a big point to the ball. Kids by this age understand that mommy's pointing to that ball. All I have to do is follow that finger and I'm going to find it. And that would be interesting to know. Does that seem to make sense to him? Does he respond
right.
to her finger pointing? And if not, then she needs to work on that first, because I would say, just like language, if he doesn't understand it, don't expect him to use it. And if he doesn't
exactly.
understand the point, don't expect him to use the point. So she needs to work that into all of her little daily routines with this child so that he begins to realize every time mommy's trying to get my attention, you know, whether it's the picture in the book or the Cheeto on the floor or the ball across the room or daddy who's on the couch, she needs to be, you know, in therapy terms, modeling that behavior. She needs to be pointing. And as with all of the gestures and all of the words and all of the routines that we implement day in, day out, it has to be really exaggerated, you know. So she
right.
needs to move that hand, and you know, so that it's so in his face that he's, you know, more likely to respond than just a quiet little, you know, right there. You know, she needs to make
yeah.
the action bigger and the words bigger so that, and he may have that. I'm just kind of thinking out loud. Does he get pointing? And not to
right.
mean, not to say, does he use it? If she uses it, does he respond the way she would expect him to?
Right. And when kids aren't looking, I do make it really big, like you talked about. I might also snap my finger,
mm-hmm.
snap my fingers to get them to kind of look at my finger there. Or if we're looking at a book, I'm not just pointing my finger. I'm tapping the page so that they're seeing it right there. Sometimes with kids, I think if they're pretty good visual trackers, I might start with my finger right in front of their face and then slowly move it out to say, look, you know, so that they start really kind of zoning in on that. So those are some things that you can do, too, with to help redirect that attention to your point. And sometimes I might even clap or do something that make them kind of notice my hands and then point.
Mm-hmm.
And again, these are things that we've just learned as kind of tricks of the trade. I tried to do a little search about teaching early gestures, and there is nothing about that on the internet anywhere. So I'm going to write a little article about that, I hope, this weekend about teaching some of that. And that's something that I haven't put on the website at all before. So we've talked about it before, but I've just never written
I was going to say, I think I smell an article coming.
Yeah.
It's the next
yeah.
article.
Well, it is
and
important.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not easy for kids who don't automatically get these, really, to teach them. I mean, it's work to get them there, and it does seem like it'd be something you could find, but I think so many people assume they just happen, and for most kids they do, but not for all kids.
Right.
And really,
right.
these are all precursors to language. This kid has some language, which is interesting, but he may have any number of these gestures. You were asking
right.
a relevant question for all we know. But in my experience, kids are definitely going to wave bye-bye before they point. They're going to clap before they point.
Right.
For sure they're going to be reaching up to mommy or daddy to save them with those out.
Those are the big ones.
Yeah, those are
yeah.
the ones that if he's not doing those things, I wouldn't even look for a point. Not to say I wouldn't do lots of modeling and sometimes help him get his index finger out when we were looking at a book, but don't expect that to be consistent or automatic for him until he has those earlier gestures, in my mind.
Right, and we talked about a couple of weeks ago how to get a kid to, you know, raise his arms up to you when he wants to be picked up. You hold your hands out to him, and then if he doesn't automatically know to put his hands up, you reach under, you know, start at his little chest and then hold those little hands up. You don't necessarily take his hands and do it. You know, you kind of push up so that you're not, you know, you can take his hands at the beginning, but you want to really try where you're giving him the least amount of assistance possible and really teach him, oh, I got to get my arms up. Most babies, again, will kind of do that instinctively when they're, you know, 6 months old or reaching.
Early.
You know.
Pretty
yeah.
much, certainly by the time they can sit or even
right.
be upright in a walker, they get that.
Right.
Save me,
they
save me, come and get me. They're reaching.
Yeah.
You know,
and,
usually.
And then, like you talked about, the little gimme fingers. That
mm-hmm.
usually starts really quickly after that where they've got their arms up, but then they start moving those little fingers like, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, gimme, 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 gimme. So that's certainly something. And I always think about my own daughter who's 14 now, but she was a master at those gimme fingers with her chubby little hands. And I will model that for kids, you know, when I want them to really reach for me and do those things, is really show them kind of how to do that opening and closing. Lots of kids that are on the spectrum are so visual. Anytime they see a hand in and thinkers doing those funny little movements, that's a big woohoo for them. So they'll start to really kind of copy that when you show them the gimme fingers like that. So that's something you can do. When we were talking about what ages these things usually come in, the test that I refer to most often is the Rossetti Infant Toddler Language Scale. And Dr. Rossetti has all those things, reaching up to be picked up, waving high and bye, extending an arm to show an object. Say your child is holding a toy and he wants you to look at it. Before he points, he would start holding that out for you to see. And again, he might be pointing to objects or reaching for an object just kind of to indicate awareness long before he's going to point communicatively. But Dr. Rossetti has all those things at 9 to 12 months. And so certainly by that time, and with typical development, we do see a lot of those even earlier. So again, those are the earliest gestures. The things he has listed at 12 to 15 months are feeding others. And didn't she say that he is feeding her, trying to feed her, that mom?
One of them said it, but I'm not sure if it was this one or that.
It was her. She said, he'll bring things to me when I ask to do so. He's pretty good with pretend play. He'll want to share his food with me while eating. So he is doing that. The next thing she said he does is that when he's stirring, that's also on Dr. Rossetti's test as a gesture listed. I think that's at about the 15-month level. Pretends to stir. That might be in the play section. But that's certainly something that, you know, he's doing, using his hands, and it's part of his play routine. So that was a good thing. So it does sound a little puzzling. I don't know if that's a good enough word for this. Interesting that he's doing some of those things. And again, like you pointed out, has some language already, has some words, but it's not doing those earlier, or at least pointing, and we don't know about those earlier gestures. But that's where I would start, is working on those. If he does have a lot of those gestures, then it really is just the pointing that he's not doing. We've already talked about how to model that and really try to get him to pay attention to that. You can do lots of hand overhand assistance. We've talked about the books, kind of tapping your little finger right there to show him how to do it. I grab kids' hands, smush all the rest of their fingers together except for their index finger, and try to help them point. Sometimes using something that they can really touch and feel, like those texture books or even different kinds of materials where they can touch it, and you really do your best to help them isolate their finger. That's a good one to do. Those little books, those M&M and Cheerio books that have those little holes, or any kind of book or toy that has a little hole, that's a great way to get a kid to isolate an index finger to point, is really, you know, put your finger in there and say, look, and have them poke their little fingers in that hole. That, I think that works a lot.
Yeah,
boys like to
book,
do that.
Was it Pat the Bunny, where they had a little ring that?
Yeah.
There was a hole. I remember my kids, when they were itty bitty, really like
that.
I don't know what it
was
about sticking that little index finger in a hole, but they really liked that.
Yeah. So just find something like that, and again, if you have to make it, get a hole puncher and, you know, do some cardstock. You know, make yourself some little homemade supplies there to work on that, because that is pretty enticing to kids to stick their fingers there.
Draw a picture, a bigger face of Daddy, and put the eyes in there, and then cut holes in the eyes. And where is Daddy's eye? And then make a deal
That's
of
cute.
Sticking your finger in there. Yeah. I mean,
that's
that
really cute.
Well, I'm the creative one. You're the productive one.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I'm going to make that today. You come up with ideas, I'm going to make it. Yeah.
You get right on that. No,
you're actually
that,
better at actually making them than I am, though.
Yeah, I guess maybe you're the idea person. I'm the implementer on the crafty part, anyway. Anyway, I know OTs talk about putting things in small cups, or even using like an egg crate and putting something in, because although I've still had some kids, they just pick them up and dump them. That doesn't work so well. But
right.
Even like putting something that they're enticed by in a hunk of Play-Doh and trying to get them to put their finger in to get it out. Anything to get his finger out where he's using it functionally is, you know, working towards, he gets that point thing. I think the tapping is hugely
successful.
Laura has really long nails. I have long enough to tap. And why it is that that works so much better than just a plain old point? It just kind of grabs their attention so much better. So I'm always tapping. Yeah. You know, I can say, right there, right there, right there. And I'm pointing. And when I tap, choop, they come right to it and respond the way I want them to.
Yeah, that's a good idea with that. I've talked about this on the show before, too. When I was in grad school and OT talked to us about this, and, you know, it's an old OT thing, and I don't really see it written anywhere, but putting a dot on a cup and having a kid isolate, drawing a magic marker dot on like a styrofoam or a sippy cup or something, and having the kid touch it and then moving the cup further and further away so that they're still kind of reaching for it with that one index finger sometimes will work to teach a kid to point. I used to have a little piano that I don't play with anymore, but that had the little keys. You know what I'm talking about, the ones that you can kind of push. It's an older toy. It's almost like a xylophone, but had those.
Oh,
little,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one, and kind of teach kids to do that, too, because they're moving their finger when they do that. So any little toy to do that as well. So, and they have to be able to do that and isolate their fingers to operate a toy before they would use it to point. So just look at those prerequisite things. And, again, I'm going to put this all in article form and hopefully get that on the website in the next week or so. So those are our ideas on that, Patty. And if we are way off base and he's doing all that and it's still not the pointing, we'll just comment back, leave me another comment on the website, and I will be happy to take another stab at it if we have gone in a different direction from what you meant. But I don't think, and like you said, Kate, not pointing in and of itself is not enough of a profile to make me think that a kid is on the spectrum. So it could be lots of other things going on.
Right, and the joint attention being consistent is another sign that would indicate probably not on the spectrum. The emerging words at this age is another good sign. I mean, he has lots of things that are definitely strengths that would, you know, he's young. So for his age to have those skills would make me believe probably not on the spectrum. So
right.
You know,
just keep doing what you're doing. You're doing a great job having him in therapy and working with him at home. That's the best you can do.
Here's a weird one that I'll just introduce. You can tell I've had a week. So I was thinking about that whole thing, and I was thinking, you know, now I haven't done this because I always feel weird about my belly and working in people's homes. I'm not going to be showing my belly, but for a mommy or to work with daddy, I wonder if this little guy does body parts, and if not, maybe they could work on, you know, his belly button and mommy's belly button. And kids kids love to stick their little finger in their belly button and anybody else's belly button who will let them. And that would be easy to work, just as you talked about the theory of moving the cup away. Frankly, right. I've tried that. I haven't ever had any great success with it, but
I don't do it anymore. I just bring it out for the show.
I really have tried that, and the kid would touch it. It never really turned into a point, and there was lots of frustration.
There.
It wasn't, I don't know, on this particular child. That's the one time I really tried it in earnest, and it didn't go so well. But I'm guessing if they would play Where's Your Belly with that kid, whether it be his belly, and then I would be goofy about, you know, Where's Mommy's Belly? And let him stick his finger in there, and then when he does, you go, beep, 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 so it, or whatever you want to do, honk, honk, or ah, or some goofy thing, so that it's a really social, fun game. And once he knows the little routine, back away and say, Where's Mommy's belly? Or stand up so he can't reach it. Show me, where's Mommy's belly button? And see if he can't, because he's going to want to reach with his, hopefully with that outstretched finger, because he's learned to do it in her belly button. So it's the same theory. It's just, how can we make that a little more normal, a little more fun, so that this kid's going to be, because, you know, if it's their cup and they want it and you're trying to get them to point to the dot, more often than not, you end up with a meltdown, you know.
Right, and they just
want to
grab,
yeah. And they're screaming because you're denying them their drink. So I would think a belly button game would be far more productive, and you could use it the same way. Once he knows the game, once he wants to stick his finger in your belly button, then get up or move back or, you know, and then he'll be reaching for it and say, show me, where is it? And I would even, if he's doing that and he's just reaching and not pointing, I'd be isolating my index finger and coming towards him with beep, 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 so he knows, put your finger in there, you know.
That's a cute, really cute idea. I'm going to put that in the article, too. That's really, really cute.
Oh, well, thanks. Now, my only problem is I don't really want to do it in somebody. I have had kids who, you know.
Me too.
Some kids are into bellies for whatever reason. And it's like, well, if that's what they're into. But I always kind of like hope that nobody's right there to see my middle-aged flub.
Oh, I'm not even sure a kid can find a belly button on me. So we're not even going to talk about that. Oh,
I've had kids where.
Take it down there.
Yeah, like I did it with them because, you know, mom was in the other room or something, or dad or whoever, and then they're there, and I'm like, oh, no, not now. We don't do that around other people.
But it would be a really cute game for a mom or dad, and I think
yeah.
it would be really fun and, like you said, really social and really interactive.
Right.
So that's a great idea.
And kids love that, you know, whether you're letting them honk your nose as a, you know, a horn
right.
or, but the belly button, and that does, they almost instinctively, I mean, I have a little guy right now, if you say, where's your belly button, he'll lift his shirt and stick his finger in there to beep it, and he's still not using it as a, you know, a pointing as a gesture to get somebody else's attention, but he's got that finger in the belly button part, so
right.
it is coming along.
Yeah, that's a prerequisite. He's got to be able
mm-hmm.
to do it somewhere, so that's a great idea. That's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving right along.
Okay, can I read
Let's
this one?
Go ahead.
Okay, let me see. Hi, Laura. I just received your Apraxia Phonological Disorders DV, and it is another great one! Exclamation point. Thank you for making this information available to us. I wish we lived closer to you so that we could bring our son to see you. At any
Aww.
Rate, I know. At any rate, I am through the first DVD, and I just have to ask a question. My son is 2 years, 2 months old and was diagnosed with mild autism. At 18 months, he seemed to have no receptive language and no expressive language. But by 19 months, his receptive language took off. He still doesn't speak. How old is he? 2 years, 2 months. But he is saying more and more sounds through therapy, for up, and various consonant sounds. He also signs more, please, thank you, and help. He loves being around other kids, makes great eye contact, smiles, laughs, has a good sense of humor, and aside from not talking and a slight fixation with things that spin, especially fans, nobody would, and we've definitely talked about fan
yeah.
kids before, nobody would ever guess that he has autism. So my question is, how do you know if a child has autism versus apraxia? He cannot blow and has no idea that he has a tongue in his mouth. We've been working on this for a while now. He eats well and can suck through a straw. The kid loves to eat. But other than that, he just doesn't use his mouth to make funny noises, blow, etc. If I stick out my tongue and or move it around, he laughs and thinks it's a game, but he doesn't imitate it. He does pretend play and imitate everything else in life, except for language and mouth activities. I know you can't diagnose him without seeing him, but can apraxia appear to be autism in young children? I'm very confused, but we're working on getting a new speech-language pathologist to help navigate through this. I know the two can be seen in one child, and that's fine. I'm definitely not trying to get away from autism. However, we just want to give him the blend of therapy that he needs. More speech, for example, more speech instead of more ABA if needed. Thanks so much for your time, help, and all that you do for parents. Tanya.
Well, this is a great question, and, you know, we kind of talked about this last week, that for a kid to get an official autism diagnosis, they have to meet that criteria that we talked about last week with all those categories and, you know, the have to have the social, you know, the interaction piece that's not there, the communication delay, and the stereotypical stuff. So it sounds like she's already had him diagnosed, and so that he did kind of fit that diagnostic criteria enough to get the diagnosis. But, and she already acknowledged this, can a child have autism and apraxia? Absolutely. Lots of children that are on the spectrum have huge motor planning problems. You know, and talking about the little fixation with the fan, you know, those kinds of things are sensory-based differences. You know, he has an over, you could either say he has an underreactive visual sensory, what am I trying to say here, Kate? You can say OTs have two, let me just back up and start over. OTs have two trains of thought with why kids get fixated on spinning or things with that visual input. They say they have either they have an underdeveloped sense of vision, underreactive sensory system, so that they want to seek it out more and more and more and more and more, or, and this is the one that I go with, they have really a preference for that sensation coming in over anything else, just strong visual preferences. So because of that, that's a sensory issue, or that's something that we would see that would be stereotypical, and that's not seen in children with just apraxia. So for her to say, could this only be apraxia instead of autism, I wouldn't think so. I would think that you've more than likely got some motor planning things going on, which are, you know, which is called apraxia, and some things that make other people feel like he's, or the person who gave him the diagnosis, qualified enough for that diagnosis. So I wouldn't say that children as a whole are apraxic and misdiagnosed as autistic. Would you, Kate?
No, but playing devil's advocate here? No, I wouldn't. But, you know, my constant droning goes towards this when it relates to autism. It's a very gray diagnosis in my mind. A child in Louisville, Kentucky might not get a diagnosis and be told that he's not on the spectrum, and a child in Los Angeles, California might be told when he's 18 months he's autistic. So
right.
I will say that he is young for in Louisville, Kentucky, and I think California is pretty progressive in their diagnosis.
They are too,
age,
yeah.
But I think, and I don't know this for sure, but it's my opinion that most experts in this country really like to wait until a child is two to
right.
diagnose them with autism. That being said, that doesn't negate the fact that this child may very well be autistic. I'm just saying I suspect if he were diagnosed or evaluated at 17 months, as he had been wherever he's from, here they would have said, well, let's see him again when he's two.
Right.
And, you know, we're going to make these suggestions, and you should implement these strategies, and here are some therapists, but let's see him because, you know, he is very young. But that being said, I don't see kids typically getting a diagnosis of autism who I suspect are really apraxic. Normally there are other behaviors and red flags that alert the experts to this is probably a child on the spectrum.
Right, that's what I think, yeah.
Right.
Unless they're just somewhere that it's super aggressive, and that's a good point. The other thing she said is that his receptive language was terrible at 18 months. He didn't make any associations.
Right.
With understanding language. And for a child that apraxia is their only problem, we don't really see that. When it's just apraxia, it just looks like an expressive language thing. And usually those kids actually have great receptive language, and there's no doubt in your mind that you are that they understand language. You know, they're responding. They may not be using words to communicate with you, but they are pretty darn communicative with their facial gestures or facial expressions, even with some gestures. So if it was just apraxia, it probably would not have been misdiagnosed that way. But apraxia can stand alone. It can be a kid's only problem, or it can be part of a bigger neurological picture, which I suspect that it probably is with this little boy.
Right.
So great question, and I love that she asked us that for our opinion on that. We've got a caller. I'm going to see if – I hope this is this mom, but let's just go ahead and take this call.
Okay, great.
Hi, caller. Are you there?
Hi. Am I there?
You're
yes.
here.
Oh,
you
good.
Made
you
it.
Did. This is Tanya. You just answered my question.
Oh!
Thank you, guys. Yeah, I have a page of notes already from the call.
Oh, my
gosh. Oh, well, good.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. But I'm so bad about when I have to talk and do the switchboard by myself and read the sheet. You could have been, were you there a long time before I looked over?
I was there, but you were answering my questions. I was taking notes as you were talking. There was just a slight delay from when I guess it's on my computer versus when you're talking. So I missed a few seconds, but that's it. But I wanted to say, I think I agree with you. I like what you said about, and there definitely was a receptive language problem early, and he did show the signs. They're very mild, but the developmental pediatrician that assessed him, even he said he's kind of borderline. One scale, he was not, like, just on the border towards typical, and on the other scale, he was just on the under for mild autism. And so he's like, I'd rather err, you know, to get the services that you need. I'd rather err towards caution. But he's like, I'm thinking by school age, he'll just need speech. Like, I think a lot of this will disappear. But, you know, that being said, I didn't really mention his mouth. And I had sent a follow-up comment last night that, I mean, does that sound like apraxia? Because I really feel like he's trying to say things. Like, we'll say na, 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 and he'll say duh. But he really thinks he's saying what he's trying, like we're asking. He looks so confused all the time. And then he didn't blow out his can. He can't blow. He doesn't know that there's a tongue. And just the more I look at him, and I'm just like, he does not know how to move that mouth.
Yeah, that sounds just like apraxia to me. And that is
great
that you're paying attention to that. And you think about apraxia as just kind of part of his overall, you know, piece of what's going on
with
him.
And I
so
loved how you,
work,
Sorry, go on.
Go ahead. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I loved how you worded it, the neurological picture. And I think there probably is a lot going on more than just one or the other. So.
Right.
Exactly. And that's okay. And we work with lots of kids that way. And actually, Kate says this all the time, Tanya. She says, I would rather have a kid that, you know, is learning and making progress like that. It doesn't really matter to me that he has an autism diagnosis, because once you've gotten him on the road to understanding language and then trying to say some things, and when you put those appropriate strategies in, a kid like your little boy can make great progress. So don't let that autism diagnosis or, you know, really kind of taint how you look at his other specific problems, like the speech with apraxia, and use the strategies on the DVD and get those sounds going.
Oh, we are, and I love the DVDs, and the kids are so stinking cute.
Oh,
I'm always laughing at all your patients. I'm like, these are cute kids.
I have the cutest caseload in the world. Lots of those children are, I don't even see them anymore because they've gotten better or, you know, turned 3 or older. But that was a great bunch of kids. I always think God gave me the perfect caseload at that time to film those DVDs because they were really, really darling kids. So thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah, and just all the parents out there, like, I definitely recommend getting the DVDs because I'm a visual. I need to see it, like, especially with apraxia and a lot of the first DVD. I know you gave so many good examples, which I liked, and I saw some of my son in them. But some of them are for older kids, and since he doesn't say words or he says so little, I'm like, I don't know if this is apraxia. Like, maybe I'm jumping the gun, but I'd rather be cautious and do that. I think you called it not pending apraxic, but you called it
suspected.
Suspected.
That's it.
Yeah.
The suspected. Yeah. And I'm like, well, if I need to push for that, I just want to make sure the speech therapy is right.
How did you? I mean, where did the word apraxia come from? With, in, you know, relative to your son, is that something that you have
I'm pretty sure it's from your website because before he got the autism diagnosis, I was always on your website looking for milestones, and you had said somewhere on there, like, kids at this age, at 18 months, they do these by leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. And I was always looking, like, is he, and you know, parents always ask the question, like, is it autism? And so I went to your website a lot, and then I think I saw the apraxia link. And I'd always had that, I mean, it was just so hard getting him to learn how to suck. And then we thought, oh, good, he sucks now through a straw. Maybe blowing's next. And blowing has taken, I mean, it's not even close. So the blowing part, and then just watching his mouth, and he was tongue-tied at birth. And, he was tongue-tied. And the developmental pediatrician said he had a high palate, which he kind of said that's kind of not good. But, you know, that may come up later with it speaking, right. But I'm like, I don't really know what that means. I didn't know he had a high palate.
Right.
So all these different things with his mouth started to slowly kind of trickle in. And then I just kept thinking, when I saw how frustrated his face looks, because he's really good in therapy, and he really works for both the ABA therapist and the speech therapist for myself, too. He's trying, and that frustration,
yeah.
It just kind of clicked. Like, I think his mouth doesn't know how to make these sounds.
Right.
And you know, we're applauding every little sound he makes because it's something now. But
exactly. And that's what you need to keep doing. But follow those strategies. And I tried, when I did the Apraxia DVD, I tried to really use lots of younger kids that other therapists may not have even said, oh, that's, you know, they might have been scared to say this is a motor planning problem because kids are so young. And some
mm-hmm.
speech pathologists, Tanya, are so scared to diagnose or say that a child has motor planning difficulties. And certainly, I mean, Kate, even in our area, we have people who will not even think about apraxia as a diagnosis for a kid under three.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have to push for that a little bit and get your therapist to kind of think about that and really point out those things that you're talking about. You know, oral groping or those subtle little mouth movements, that's a big indicator that that's what it could be. So when he's trying to imitate blowing or imitate something that's completely off, you know, point that out to your new therapist. Didn't you say you were trying to get somebody new? Yeah.
We are, yeah. We
well,
went through the early intervention, and they only wanted to do one day a week, and I thought he needed more, so then I got out of them because my insurance paid for more, and then I'm now back with them because there's a really good therapist there that I want to try and work with that seems really into it. And so I'd rather have one day a week of good therapy, and if she gives a strategy to do on the other days. And there's actually a speech clinic here in town. We're in a small city in South Georgia. And there's this, and so through the university, we're going to try and hook up with them and get some extra speech therapy just as they train their speech language. just whatever it takes.
Yeah. Well, you sound like you've got a good plan and you're really on the ball. And I want you to call us back in a few months and let us know how he's doing.
I will. Thank you so much. Because really, I thought, I'm like, is this in my head, the apraxia? Because no one really ever talks about it. And it's so hard to find information online except through your website. And the video really was good.
I'm so glad you liked it. Thank
you
so much. But call us back in a couple
guys.
Months and get call us back in a couple of months and give us an update.
I will. All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Right,
thank
bye.
You. Bye.
Bye.
She's hanging up, and I'm already thinking of questions. I was going to say, I wonder what kind of signer he is. Is he doing signs? I guess he has signs. More please, thank you, and help.
Yeah, she's doing it. That was great. Yeah, I think she's, and she sounds like an on-the-ball mom anyway.
Oh, yes. And, you know, this is another one of my always droning on about it, but certainly not all the kids that I've seen that were on the spectrum did I think they had signs of apraxia, but quite a few of them. I mean, I think that lots of kids on the spectrum. Now, a lot of times it's only me who's thinking it because, like you said, not everybody is even willing to go there, you know, they'll write it off as something else. But if you implement those strategies that you have on the DVD, lo and behold, it begins to work. And in my opinion,
it
doesn't really matter if that child gets a formal diagnosis of apraxia. What matters is that mom and the therapist know what to do to help him and dad.
Right.
So, you know, just implement the strategies and they may have it getting better before anybody realizes that was what it was.
Yeah, and who cares?
Yeah.
As long as it gets better. Yeah.
Yeah, we're about working on it and moving past it. It does sound like he's
already
making, you know, nice progress for his age.
Yeah.
And things are, it does sound like the developmental pediatrician was fairly progressive, saying it's borderline.
It does.
In Louisville, our experts, if it's borderline, say it's not. You know what I mean?
I know, and that's too bad because a lot of kids then do go on and get that diagnosis when they're 5 or 6.
Right.
And I get a lot of calls from parents who say, guess what? Now somebody has said that he is on the spectrum, and you told me that when he was 2, and I didn't want to believe you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'll say, gosh, I really, it's almost a double blow now because other people were telling me that at 2, and because this one person that was supposed to know what they were doing said no, now we've kind of lost out on these, you know, 3 or 4 years when we could have maybe made some different decisions. So I think it was great, and it sounds like in that situation that mom was fine with that, and she's moving along with that and pursuing everything that she can to make sure he gets the services he needs. So that's
great. And any time I have a child on my caseload, diagnosis or not, whose receptive skills are significantly delayed at 17 months and making really nice progress by 19 months, I'm very optimistic for the future for
me
that,
too.
Whether he has a word or not. You know what I mean? To me, that's like, wow, when we began to focus on this, you really, you know, soaked it up like a sponge. And that means that's pretty good for that age. And to me, it says the future's probably going to be okay.
I know. So, and that's what I was meaning when I was saying, Kate always says this, I'd rather have a child, you know, regardless of what the diagnosis is, if they are starting and making progress. You know, and sometimes it is our kids that have the autism diagnosis or we suspect they're autistic that make more progress than other kids.
Right.
So, yeah, that's what I meant by that, too. All right, let's try to get this last question in. You know what? We had this caller. Let me try to call her.
Are you ignoring callers again, Laura?
I don't mean to. Caller, are you there? Hello? Hello? I think we have a caller that wants to stay muted. This may be their only way to listen. I think I've seen this on here before. You know, I'm not great at operating the switchboard. Sorry, people.
Where's our technical support person?
He's right here, but he's
not doing
a little bit of our show. I'm just kidding. He's doing other things today, and I called him over here, and he said, I think they want to stay on mute. So, anyway.
Well, I'm glad you got Tanya on. It's great to actually hear the voice with the...
I know.
In South Georgia. I would not expect South Georgia, nothing against Georgia. It's a wonderful state, but I wouldn't expect them to be proactive in diagnosing kids on the spectrum. But apparently the developmental pediatrician she went to is...
Well, because of Atlanta there, and their Babies Can't Wait program is big, and I get a lot of DVD orders and
now
lots of questions
is that
from
their early intervention,
Georgia.
Babies Can't
yeah.
Wait?
Yeah, that's their early intervention. Isn't
that
cute name?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they have a pretty progressive program there and lots of, I get lots of DVD orders from Georgia. Thanks, Georgia.
Tanya's doing it right because it sounds like she's already done her homework on who's good. She's gone one place, tried another, going back to the first place, and that is it takes a very hands-on, proactive
dedicated
mother to advocate for her kid because otherwise it doesn't go nearly as well. And these precious time for all of them, and particularly the 19-month-old child, so she's doing it right.
She's doing great. All right, let's move on and try to squeeze this last question in since I told this mom we were going to answer her question today. It's from Juliana, and she says, Hi, hope I'm not asking something that's been answered. My son just turned 2. He has at least 100 words and tons of animal sounds, many of which he has said in context and has never said again. Let's just stop right here. If a child has just imitated a word or said a word one time, we don't count it as part of his vocabulary. To be able to count a word that a child says as part of his quote-unquote vocabulary, I want to give you some guidelines here. And again, this is just the Laura Mize train of thought for the day. It's not anything, you know, that I've read anywhere, but I do think it's pretty on with what other speech pathologists do. To count as a word in a child's vocabulary, the word has to be consistent, meaning that he says it a lot, not just one time. It has to be spontaneous, meaning that he says it on its own. It's not just that you say car and he says car one time, one day, 2 months ago, and you count it as a word. You know, no. It has to be consistent. He has to say it on his own. And then she goes on to say, I don't know if it's in here, but she says, you know, when do you know to count it as a word if you, you know, do you count animal sounds as words? And my other thing with this, a word has to be consistent, it has to be spontaneous, and then if I can spell it, I count it as a word. So moo is a word that I count as vocabulary on lots of children that I see on my caseload because I can spell it and they say it on their own, and it's what they mean for a lot of times kids will kind of call a cow a moo, and if they're
a
using
lot
it
of
that
times
way.
Yeah, they can't say cow, so you say, what is it? Moo, and they mean, I know what it is, but moo's what I can say.
Mm-hmm. And they use it as a label, and so if I can spell it, I count it as a word. But those are just I think, pretty consistent across-the-board guidelines. If you don't say that a child has 100 words if he's only said the majority of those words one time. And so the reason that's important is this mom says that she's in the process of seeking early intervention. If you said to some therapist who came, or if you were like in our state now, we have a little on-the-phone screen that service coordinators are doing with parents before they even decide if someone can come out and see if their child is delayed. And for her to say he just turned two and he has 100 words, that might be an automatic, sorry, lady, you don't need our help. When, in fact, you know, who knows how many words this little boy says consistently. So do not count a word if you don't hear it all the time, if he doesn't say it, and if he doesn't say it on his own. So that's my little soapbox for the day.
Yeah,
and you do that
at some
too,
point,
Kate.
Yes. At some point, I have found, you know, in the trenches with real live mommies, that it's oftentimes really the best, most focused, attentive mothers out there who will overinflate the number of kids, words their kids have, because they've listened so intently for so long, and they may even have a list on the refrigerator of every word that kid's ever popped out. And anymore, I'll ask, how many words do you think he has? And they'll, you know, say, she says 50. And I say, really? In a day, how many words do you think you hear?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that comes a little closer. If
and
they tell
say,
me,
oh, five.
Right.
Yeah. When you say that, yeah.
Right.
And so you know what I would say to that?
Two words, what?
She only has five words, you know. She's only saying five words. And no, she doesn't have 50 words. You take that zero off, she has five.
That's
yeah.
Really, I think, you know, he may in fact have 10 or 15 consistent words, but 5 is a lot closer than 50 for a child who uses 5 different words in a day. So, because I sometimes have fallen into that trap where I think, oh, 100 words, and then over time I think, well, gee, I can only get 20 in a session. Where are the other 90, 80 words? And it's because they have recorded and remembered every word the child ever, ever, ever uttered. And we really do mean consistent, you know, spontaneous and consistent.
And I fell for that a lot earlier in my career. And I'm saying, but the mom said he had 100 words. I don't understand. He should be doing phrases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got enough vocabulary to do phrases. And I would go completely down, you know, take the different fork in the road as far as treatment goes, as to if I had realized, oh, he's only has 10 that he says on his own or fairly consistently. So you want to be really, really careful. And, again, the reason it's so important for this mom is she's about to have an early intervention assessment. So don't blow it by overinflating what he can really say. Only count those words that he's truly said. And I have a mom on my case like this that we've talked about this a lot, and he's got a big diagnosis and some other testing. And I, before he went to a different neurologist, I said, please, 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 I know we differ on this, but don't go in there saying he has 50 words. He has 10 words. That's all he has. He's 2.5 and has 10 words. Please don't go in there saying that. And she took it very calmly and very nicely the way it was meant. But I do think it is, like you said, the best mommies and the most attentive ones and the ones who are hanging on to every little thing their babies say and counting that as a word when really it was just an imitation or just maybe even a pop-out word. We talked about before how children that are apraxic and children on the spectrum may say a word one time and then you never hear it again for a long, long time. So those words don't really count. It's great that they did it and it's in their little brain somewhere. But you can't really count that as a word.
Right. So, and that does sometimes happen. And normally I think a good examiner of any discipline will ask the next question. Oh, really? How often do you hear those? And I've found how many in a day comes real close to how many words they really have.
They really have, yeah. She goes on to say, he's not combining words or answering questions. And seeing that would tell me, when she says he's not combining words, that he has 100 words. I mean, we know that children, when they have really consistent vocabularies between, you know, right at that 50-word mark, between 35 and 50 words, they on their own usually start to do a lot of phrases. So that's a red flag, you know, that she says he's not combining words or answering questions, though he talks constantly. And one of my questions to her was, you know, does he, when you say he talks constantly, is he using single words that are real words that you understand and consistently recognize, or is he just doing jargon? And jargon is when a child uses those unintelligible sentence length utterances, it sounds like they're going on and on. You know, they have adult intonation. You can tell if they're asking a question or if they're making a demand or if they're really mad at you, kind of chewing you out. You know that by their intonation. But that was one of the things that I wanted to ask her is he doing that, or is he by talking constantly, does she mean that he's using lots of single words or that he's using jargon? Because sometimes I've fallen for that too. They'll say, he talks all the time, and I'll think, why is he not talking when I'm here? And they'll say, oh, I meant he's doing that, you know, when he does jargon. And so you have to sometimes kind of tease out what a mom means by talking versus doing the jargon. And the reason that I asked that is because she said that he likes to read his books, and she put that in quotes. So I took it that he's doing the jargon while he's reading the books, but it could be that he's just sitting there looking at the pages. So this would have been a good time for her to call in, and we could have asked her those questions. But anyway, we're way over time.
Well, she can call in next week and give us her responses so we can. How old did she say he was?
Just turned two.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll start with this one next week, this same question, and maybe in the meantime, this mom will answer me, or we can talk her into calling us, and we can ask her these questions. But I did want to respond here since when I told her that we would, and secondly, I want to catch her before she does the assessment and says he has 100 words so that the speech pathologist doesn't close her book and say, okay, you don't qualify,
mm-hmm.
and not really take the time to talk about those things, because in a perfect world, that would never happen, but I get lots of comments from moms on the website who say, you know, my son didn't qualify for therapy, and then they list all the things that he can do, or I'll think, there's no way this kid should be in therapy, this kid should have qualified, so I know that happens sometimes.
Right, and it certainly could, so she needs to be real specific on, you know, how much she's really hearing those words. Because some she even says, I've heard one time. A one-timer does not count.
Absolutely
she can take
not.
Those off the total list. And I agree with you, because so often if they have that 40 to 50 word core vocabulary, they are combining words. It's bye-bye, mommy, more cookie. You know, they're taking their little words and they're putting them together to form little phrases. And if he's not, it really kind of says, he probably doesn't have those 100 words.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, or he's going to have a sequencing problem. And she does say there probably are some other things going on, because she says that he has lots of sound substitutions. But we will discuss this question in detail next week, and hopefully she will respond and give us some more information so that we can give her a really good answer and some different ideas. And she said she's, in the process of getting an evaluation. So that's great that they're going to get help. But I just wanted her to be sure that she's saying all the right things.
All right,
that does it for this week's show. Before
good.
We're done, I don't think my mom can hear me right now because it's not streaming, but my parents' 45th wedding anniversary is tomorrow, so I wanted to say happy anniversary, Mom and Dad.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Okay, all right.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Talk to you later. Bye.